Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Welcome to another edition of Life Behind Bars. I'm Noah Rothbaum, the Daily Beast half full editor. Joining me as always is my colleague and co-host David Wanchurch. How are you, Dave?
I'm doing well. Yourself?
I am doing well. Summer is definitely here.
Oh yeah.
We are getting into the nice weather and it feels good. I'm ready for it.
Time to put the ice in the scotch is how I look at it.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Summer drinking, I often find myself being a lot less formal. You know, it's lots of outdoor events and, you know, being guests in people's homes or staying in, you know, Airbnbs or whatever. And often, you know, it's sort of ad hoc and whatever's in the cabinet, you know, in terms of glassware you kind of use, and you sort of find yourself, you know, whether you're drinking out of an old jam jar or a rocks glass or a wine glass.
Yeah, it seems wrong to be picky about such things.
You and I have discussed this over the last couple of weeks, but sort of this idea that so entrenched in our minds that, you know, that certain drinks belong in certain glasses. And some people in our world are very, very particular about such things.
Well, I used to know one bartender who traveled with a little leather case that had two perfect Austrian crystal cocktail glasses in it. I thought that was going a little far, but you know, you do you.
I've had the pleasure of having several meals with our colleague and half full columnist Mimi Sheridan, who is obviously, you know, I should say esteemed colleague, you know, who's the New York Times food critic for a long time.
Legendary.
She's in her 90s. And we were eating at a restaurant, and she loves a whiskey sour. That is her favorite. I still hope the three of us are supposed to do
There's nothing wrong with that.
Yeah, we're supposed to do a story about that at some point, and hopefully we get to do it in the near future.
I would love that.
And I remember we were having dinner. We ordered drinks. She ordered her whiskey sour, came to the table. She politely informed the bartender or manager who was waiting on us because of her that this was not a whiskey sour glass. This is the wrong glass. And I pretended that there was a spot on my shirt or something, or, you know, I was focusing on a point in the horizon, not to make eye contact with anybody, but, you know, she politely, and the manager to his credit said, you know, look, I yes, Mimi, you are correct. This is not a traditional whiskey sour glass, but this is the one that we use for our whiskey sour. With that, you know, he left and the drinks were enjoyable. And I thought, you know, that is a pretty funny anecdote. And, you know, she was right. I mean, I would not have probably pointed it out myself, but.
No, I tend to take these things as they come and be just grateful that I'm getting a drink at all rather than, you know, being out and working for a living. But she must have been miserable during the 1970s. I got to tell you, if she's got that level of like detail requirements for glassware, because I remember our late dear friend, Gary or Gaz Regan, telling me about one of the bars he used to work in the 1970s in New York. And I remember similar things quite vividly. No matter what drink it was at this bar, whether it was a martini, whether it was a draft beer, whatever it was, it came in a white wine glass. That was the one kind of glass they stocked. Why? Because nobody really gave a shit. You know, it was like, look, we're here. It's the 1970s. We're out to have fun in our bar. We don't really care. And he said, you know, nobody ever complained. It was fine. He thought that was taking things a little far down, and I do too. But at the same time, you know, if it's a fun bar and I got to drink my very dry Tanqueray martini, which was basically what I was drinking then, or my scotch and soda out of a white wine glass, well, okay, that's what I'm drinking.
And I think if, you know, an establishment kind of owns that, right, where, you know, we've both been in bars or restaurants where, you know, they only use, you know, ball jars, right? And it's,
yeah.
Or this idea that Italians only use, you know, water glasses for wine, which obviously we both know that Italians also own wine glasses, but
yes,
like
they do.
Often it's this idea that, like, you know, it's somehow refreshing to break the rules, you know, and meanwhile, you know, it's probably because the bar can't afford, you know, to buy 15 different types of glasses, and
or they want you to think that they're just that kind of casual fun bar, when in point of fact, corporate marketing decision, and they buy ball jars by the case,
right? You know, right.
They're not left over from making jam.
Well, I remember talking to a bartender and bar owner who had a bar in I think in San Francisco, and she was saying that for them, you know, a lot of it was they were so concerned with paying back their investors on time that, like, you know, they were very careful to make the menu so that, you know, and it came down to what drinks went on the menu, came down to often what glass they were in, because right. They only had a certain number of coupes, a certain number of, like, you know, martini glasses. So, like, you know, if four drinks would require the same glass, they couldn't do them in the same month or whatever the flip was. They would have to, like, swap it out for a drink in a different type of glass, because they couldn't afford to buy.
They couldn't buy the cases of glassware.
Right. So they were, you know, they just had enough to cover one drink in a coupe. And that was, like, the rule. Like, we could only have one drink in a coupe and that's it. And that was, you know, it sort of dawned upon me, like, wow, like that's a real thing. Like, that's, you know, that's a real cost for a bar. You know,
there's a lot of breakage, you know, that's one of the problems.
Oh, for sure.
I mean, glasses are made to break. I've got a friend who's a glass blower, and he gave us all these beautiful glasses, and you know, we've been using them, and whenever we see him, he says, you know, so what's up with the glasses? I go, we haven't broken any yet. And he's really disappointed in us. You know? He wants to make better ones.
Right.
He doesn't want us using the same old ones that we've been using. But, you know, if you think back, like in the 19th century, when the American bar was established, it really didn't have that many different kinds of glassware. I mean, they started, there'd be like a small bar glass and a large bar glass. The one was for like cocktails, and it was basically what we call an old-fashioned glass now. You would put cocktails in that and like smashes and all these like kind of short American-type drinks, eggnogs. And then there'd be the tall glass where you'd put things that had ice in them, you know, that were big, long, slow sippers. Then, you know, there might be a little pony glass for spirits. And that was really about it. I mean, there wasn't much. Eventually, things got a little fancier, and they added a stemmed glass for cocktails so that once they stopped putting ice in the cocktail so that it wouldn't get warm, you know, from your hand. And that was a big move. And then they had to add a sour glass because the cocktail glass was too small to hold a jigger of booze, plus the juice of half a lemon, because these are little tiny cocktail glasses.
Sure.
If you ever go to like antique stores and look at the cocktail glasses, they hold like maybe 3 ounces tops.
Yeah.
You know, little tiny things made to have a 2 ounce jigger of booze and whatever water melts into it when you stir it, you know, and maybe some bitters, just a tiny bit of sugar. So they just don't hold anything.
That was one of the great epiphanies, you know, of spending time with Dale DeGroff, you know, the father of the rebirth of the cocktail, like early on, you know, when the rebirth of the cocktail, you know, started.
Yeah.
It was all of these giant martini glasses that could hold like half a bottle.
Oh,
like
my God. Bird bath glasses.
Right. I mean, I remember going with a bunch of bartenders at one point to the St. Regis, right, and to the King Cole Room, and they're giant glasses, yeah. and you and I were there, and
I remember that.
Unless you could drink, like, I don't suggest anybody chug their martini, but you'd literally have to chug it in order for it to stay the right temperature. Otherwise,
not even just to stay cold, but to avoid being like room temperature.
Right. You know? And Dale was just, you know, that was one of his big things, was like, look, like they were small so that the drink would stay cold. And it was one of those things where like the light bulb goes off in your head, like, oh, right. That is the point. Like,
they were also small, so you wouldn't get absolutely smashed.
Well, that also, yes.
I mean, those
you're going to have more than one.
I remember on that occasion and on many others when I'd go out to like steakhouses and get the Birdbath Martini. And, you know, and that was a post-war thing. It happened after World War II when they suddenly had double-sized martini and old-fashioned glasses. Mm. And that meant it went up from like 3 ounces to 6 ounces. Once it went to 6 ounces, then they doubled that to 12 ounces. And once you got a 12-ounce martini glass, you're in a world of hurt, you know?
No, I don't care how big the steak is. You can't, it doesn't balance out. A
12-ounce martini glass, you really don't fill it up. And when you don't fill it up, people complain. So right. Then you do fill it up, and then you've got a 12-ounce martini. Yeah.
On a previous episode, we were chatting with Christopher Kimball for Milk Street about this sort of American tendency to customize everything, right?
Oh, yeah. Like,
And you definitely see that with drinks where, you know, every drink suddenly has to have its own glass. And like some of them I get, right? Like, you know, the mint julep glass, you know, you have these beautiful julep cups, like part of the whole drink is the presentation. You don't want the ice level to form on the, you know, the.
But, you know, you could do that with a highball glass too.
Sure, for sure, for sure. I mean, where the Moscow Mule comes in.
Yeah.
You know, a copper, you know, mug. And I mean, obviously, like, does it affect its flavor? No, but it's, you know, part of the ritual.
It's part of the reason why people order the drink, you know.
Looks cool.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
But like some of it is, you know, I've also talked to people. I remember talking to a man, we were doing an event in LA and he came up and he said to me afterwards, you know, I love margaritas, but I don't order them. I thought to myself, why? I hate the glass they come in. I don't like the big margarita glass. And I said, okay, like, I don't, you know, that's okay. Like, you know, you
put it in another glass for you.
You can order it in a rocks glass. And it was like, I had told him the secret to life. He was like, you can do that? And I was like, yeah, just tell them that you want it on the rocks or regular cocktail, you know, just a regular glass without a stem. And he said, oh man, like that's, I'm going to do that. But you know, can.
I often get really angry about people who won't order things in a cocktail glass because often it's based on like this bullshit macho idea that, you know, it's not masculine to drink things in a cocktail glass, which is, you know, absurd. Humphrey Bogart drank out of cocktail glasses every day of his adult life. And he was a fairly masculine guy.
Yeah.
Yeah. Robert Mitchum, you know, drank out of cocktail glasses. Yeah.
Well, the same knock on, you know, certain colors of drinks. And I mean,
I know that stuff all just really severely tries my patience. You know, it's like,
I hope that is some of the stuff that we lose in the, you know, really forever in the next few years, that ascribing drinks to one sex or another, I think is such a ridiculous and stupid idea.
It's limiting and it's demeaning and it's no fun. And really, who cares, you know?
Right.
That's the thing.
And I say, you know, as we always say, drink what makes you happy. And I think also drink it.
Drink how you like.
And drink it in whatever glass makes you happy. You know,
yeah.
You want everything in a coupe? Then put everything in a coupe.
The really classic V-shaped ones, the Art Deco glass that was introduced in the 20s, that's a hard glass to drink from. I understand why people don't like that particular one, because the sides just flare out, and if you tip it slightly, suddenly you're wearing your drink. But in a coupe, or you know, something like that, where the sides come up horizontally, vertically rather, to keep it from sloshing so much. There's a reason you want it on a stem. You want that drink to be as cold as you could possibly get it.
Yeah. And
anything that helps to keep it cold is great.
There are glasses that I have in our house that I just won't use because they're so delicate.
Yeah.
That like I'm always worried I'm going to break them. But that, you know, I like a certain heft of the glass just to make sure that even if it does break, it'll break in big pieces. And like some of them just, I feel like if I look at them the wrong way, they're just going to crumble into a pile of, you know, back into sand where the glass came from. But the silica, but, you know,
it's funny. When my wife, Karen, was pregnant and she had to stop working many years ago now, she was working for one of the great restaurants in New York, Larry Ford Jones, an American place, you know, long gone, but really much beloved restaurant.
Yeah.
And for her goodbye party, Larry and the staff gave her a set of six Tiffany Martini glasses.
Ooh.
That we still have because we're afraid to use them. A, because they hold about 10 ounces.
Right.
So, but B, because they're delicate crystal glasses and, you know, are incredibly beautiful as long as you want 10 ounces of cold gin, but, which, you know, I do, but, they are, you know, we just keep them in the cabinet and just look at them every once in a while just to make ourselves happy. But I don't think we've used one in the last 5 years.
You know, looking at like old cocktail books and pamphlets for, you know, brands or other things where, you know, you often see, you know, it's amazing how, you know, certain drinks that we now ascribe to a certain type of glass, you know, for decades came in a different glass or, you know, you know, or even there's certain, you know, sometimes they show, I think it's in like, you know, Trader Vic in one of his books has like a big list of glassware. And like a lot of them, you never even see anymore. Like you couldn't find them anymore. You know what I mean? It's just like, it's amazing to see how drink trends sort of play out through glassware over time.
Oh yeah. I mean, if you go to any good thrift shop and just go to, I always love going to the glassware shelf where, you know, or like a Salvation Army or something like that. And you can just chart like the history of America there, by the different sizes and shapes of glasses. And often they're dateable because they're wedding glasses and they got the date of the wedding stamped on them, you know, and it's like, that is an ugly glass. Of course, it's from 1987. You
right,
know?
Exactly.
It's like, oh boy.
And like, you know, I think when things are, you know, better, like economically, you know, like the glasses tend to get ever larger, you know, and you get these, you know, crazy rocks glasses that like, you know, I it's sort of the equivalent to the bathtub martini glass where you could put
the bucket glass, I guess.
And it's a giant bucket, you know, it's like, you know, half a bottle of bourbon in there, you know, you're like,
oh, easily.
Wow. Yeah. This is not, I mean, it's like stuff that would now almost be sold as like a ice bucket. People used to drink that of like.
Well, I mean, it was the same thing as with the martini glasses. You know, it started out as the old fashioned glass that holds about 6 ounces. And then they doubled that and make the double old fashioned. That's 12 ounces. And then, you know, that becomes the standard. So they got to double it again. And then you've got a fifth of bourbon in your mitt.
It's a lot. It's interesting. But at the same time, like, shakers like usually stay for the most part the same size.
Yeah.
I mean, I have one or two very large ones in my collection, but it's like over time, it's like the glassware gets very large, but like, I mean, maybe the pitchers like get ever larger for stirring cocktails, but the shakers sort of weirdly stay the same size, no matter how big.
Well, there's kind of a practical limit on how big you can make it, you know, to keep in somebody's house.
Or lift and, up.
Like. Yeah, because I've got a couple of very large ones that really take effort to you know, you fill it up and you pour your quart of gin in and your, you know, 8 ounces of vermouth and your ice and if you want a shaken martini, which, you know, I don't always hate, especially if you've got a lot of people, you could shake up martinis for everybody.
Yeah,
like everybody in that thing, but it takes effort and it's hard to strain. So there's kind of a practical limit there, I suspect.
Yeah, but it is funny. It's like then it's like you have to make more batches. Right,
yeah.
Like,
yeah, it means, you know, the poor bartender has to do twice the work.
Exactly, exactly. Or like, you know,
that was supposed to be for four of you.
Four straws. Just put four straws in this. It's fine.
Yeah.
You know, even looking in thrift stores or some of these books, you see a glass and you're like, what did people use that for? You know what I mean? And you know, sometimes it's interesting to try to figure out, sort of reverse engineer what creation was supposed to go.
I got a friend of mine, Luca Picchi, one of the top bartenders in Italy, gave me the weirdest thing. And it was wrapped and he hands it to me and I unwrap it later and I'm sitting in my hotel room in Florence looking at this thing trying to figure out what the hell it is. It was a clay pipe with the name of a long forgotten Italian aperitivo brand on it, and you were supposed to drink the aperitivo through the stem of the pipe, it turns out. You know.
Wow.
Because it was like, it had like a sea captain theme in their marketing.
Okay. That's an interesting. And
so it was like, yeah, it's like, you know, kombucha, drink from the captain's pipe. I couldn't figure out what the hell you were supposed to do with it at first. I had to call him and say, you know,
what is this?
Great. Thank you so much. But what the fuck?
Where did this come from?
Yeah.
You know, when I first started really drinking cocktails and writing about stuff, like you know, you go to like a big Salvation Army like in upstate New York or something, and it was just, you know, aisle, like a huge aisle just full of like glasses and
all kinds of stuff,
you know, and like, you know, glasses with like a big bowl for ice and like, you know, maybe different sizes. And I mean, it's obviously wonderful for us because we were looking for that kind of stuff, but it always made me so sad, you know, because it was like these, you know, big sets and like clearly people bought it to like, you know, for to drink with friends and family and have a good time, and we had gotten so far away from the cocktail. And now, to my chagrin, like those types of things, we should have bought all of those sets.
Yeah, I know.
Sets are now really
their kids weren't interested, but their grandkids were.
Exactly. And now those things are very collectible. And I was like in a gallery in the Berkshires a couple of months ago, and these sets that, you know, we could have bought for a few dollars are now, of course, selling for hundreds of dollars.
Right.
You know, and it's, but at least people hopefully use them. And I think that's sort of, that made me happy to see that they weren't just going to be thrown away or, you know, forgotten in some sad thrift store, but they would.
Funny, about 10 years ago up in rural Pennsylvania at the Salvation Army, we had a house out in the country full of people, and I needed to make punch for everybody, and we didn't have a bowl. So I went to the Salvation Army and I got a bowl, cut glass bowl, with 12 cups and a tray and a glass ladle, the whole set for $20.
Exactly.
And then I was like, oh, that's good. And then a couple more people were coming, it turns out, from, you know, somewhere, some who were up in the country at another house, and they were going to come and visit, and we didn't have enough cups. And I remembered they had another bowl there, so I went back and bought that one too for another $20 just for the cups. So we'd have enough cups. And the last time I saw one of those sets there, it was selling for $120. No more getting the punch set just for the extra cups.
Yeah, you know what happened in the intervening year, Save? Somebody wrote a book called Punch. And wrote it for all of us.
That was pretty dumb, I gotta say. But fortunately, I already had my punch
bowl. I was gonna say, you already had like three or four punch bowls, so you were set. But for everybody else who was still looking for punch bowls,
I do apologize for that.
Well, cheers to that. So, if you find any cool punch glasses or other glasses, send us a photo on Twitter. We'd love to check it out.
Oh, yeah, we'd love to weigh in and just see what you find. It's a wide world of glassware, that's for sure.
Cheers.
Cheers.
Dave and I encourage you to drink responsibly always.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.